Hi everyone, welcome to our third episode of the Freedom and Faith and Feminism series. My name is Carol Nganga, team lead in Msingi Trust, and I will be the host of this conversation with a woman that I have seen from afar. I celebrated your ordination from afar, and I'm very honored to be seated here with you. Could you please introduce yourself?
Thank you, Carol. Yes. I'm so delighted to also have this session with you.
Yes.
And humbling to know that many people, including you, celebrated our consecration.
Yes.
I feel so humbled.
Yes.
Thank you. So my name is Rose Nerea Ayemba Okeno. And those are my family names. Mm-hmm. Okeno is actually my late husband's name. Mm-hmm. I was born fifth in a family of nine.
Yeah.
Most of whom have gone to be the Lord. And I was born on 12th day of December, 1969.
We are almost birthday mates.
In a village called Eshibanga,
yes.
In Butere, Kakamega County. My parents were domestic farmers. My father used to till, he's also deceased, to till the land, to do farming for a living for us. My mother used to do business. He still lives. She's about 8 or 9 years now, mm-hmm. although semi-bedridden.
Okay.
But we thank God for them. I grew up supporting them with labor on the family farm. Mm-hmm. My father, as I said, passed on barely when I was 19 years in school. It wasn't easy because he was almost the sole breadwinner. My mother would do a bit of business, but it wasn't giving us much. So when my father died, I was still in high school, and I wasn't sure how I was going to manage. Mm. But somehow, God giving my mother grace, she was able to raise us, seven of us, because then one of us had gone to be with the Lord. Mm. And so she supported us, she raised us up to where we are today. Then, as I grew up, I emulated them.
Mm.
They were Christians. My father was an evangelist in the church. She was a lay reader. Mm-hmm. And so when you are growing in a Christian family, you also, emulate and able to grow like your parents.
Mm.
I started teaching Sunday school at a very young age. We used to sing for the bishops when they visit, mm. and I used to like it. If
yeah.
anybody stopped me, I would cry the whole day.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's me. Mm. I am married with four children.
Mm-hmm.
They are, all of them are adults.
Yeah.
The last born is now 22 years.
All right.
He's just about to join university.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is called Lois
mm-hmm.
Okeno,
mm-hmm.
and then followed by Stephen
mm-hmm.
Okeno,
mm-hmm.
then followed by Mary Okeno and Fanuel.
Mm-hmm.
Both girls, Lois and Mary, are teachers.
Okay.
And Stephen is a developer.
Mm.
He's an engineer
right.
in computer science.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
They have actually graced my marriage with five grandchildren.
Oh, yeah. You're a grandmother.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So that's who I am.
Yeah. Thank you for introducing us to you.
Yes.
And to your family.
Yes.
So for this conversation, we are chronicling how you found your voice and also your leadership journey. And to you, if I'm not mistaken, you are the first female bishop in the Anglican Church of Kenya to be ordained. Is that true?
Yeah.
Yes, so I would...
Though coming after Bishop Emily of Bondo,
yes.
who is an assistant bishop.
Okay.
Yes, so assistant yes. bishop, the mm-hmm. difference between me and her is that she's not in charge, entirely in charge of a diocese,
mm-hmm.
but I'm entirely in charge
mm-hmm.
of a diocese, elected.
Elected.
Hers is an appointment, mm-hmm. but she, actually, I come after her, so mm-hmm. we are the two of us.
You're the two of you.
Yeah.
All right, I am excited to learn about the journey. What was your beginnings of your leadership journey?
Carol, as I said, growing up in a Christian family, as a little girl, I liked going to church. And so that love for church was later shaped into a calling as a youth,
mm-hmm.
Serving under the clergy there. And I can remember how he mentored me. Mm-hmm. A male clergy called, he was a venerable archdeacon, called Elphas Nyamwata. He still lives on, but now too old.
Mm.
That was in later 80s. What started as a need to relate as a child later became my calling and vocation.
Yeah.
So beyond the role of motherhood, wifehood, carol, which I acquired at birth, I had a feeling within me, a nudge, a probe, a relentless probe that there was more to this. Just being a traditional woman, wife, there was more to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I got married at 21. Mm-hmm. That was too early for me.
Yeah.
And I got married to a priest in the Anglican Church. Mm-hmm. So as a woman and a wife of a priest, I would then move around with him in parishes doing ministry. But then before I missed something, before I got married, I did... lead youth into, you know, as their secretary in one of our parishes. I did secretarial work, a leadership position that was so strategic for women those days.
Yeah.
In fact, when I was elected, people were like, I mean, how would they be without a woman, a young girl for that matter, to lead the youth? That's how it all started.
Yeah.
So at Sunday school, then I go to the youth, then I get married to a priest, and there we were doing ministry together. And he really supported, in fact, for me, it is at that point when I was supporting him in his ministry that now the then bishop was able to identify this huge leadership potential in me. And then he took me for theological training. Then from there, something that happened, Carol, that will interest you, is that we went to class, about seven of us, two ladies and five men.
Yes.
And in the class, I was actually talking, but after graduation, they were ordained, the men were ordained before us, 3 years before us.
Yeah.
But we kept on, you know, sort of just pushing and asking the then bishop, and we trained together, what is our fate? So we pushed. We tried to get into the space. But again, there was so much debate, you know, if you'll be familiar with... Synod. Synod is the supreme organ of the church in the Anglican Church that makes policies. So these discussions will be there for quite, you know, every other time they will discuss women ordination, and you'll be surprised what some of the arguments that were coming on the floor.
What were the arguments that were coming?
I mean, how do you ordain women? You know, women may go, you ministrate every month, you know, those kind of things, without realizing that it's so sacred for a woman to have periods.
Yes.
Because it's ordained by God. Yeah.
So yesterday we were having a conversation on radio in Lwasi.
Yeah.
And one of the respondents asked,
Why,
after our discussion, he asked, why would we, women should not lead in church because they give birth. So it's the same.
God created us to be co-creators. And ordained women in a special way that we are able to carry productivity.
Yeah.
You know, we carry the children. So I keep asking men, if you married a woman that is not having periods, how would you feel? That's how we need to appreciate that periods are ordained by God. And I know that even there are women, because now of culture, who would want to bring themselves down.
Yes.
And some would even, like in most cases, some of the questions I encounter from women is, can one go to the altar when they are in periods? I'm like, what is the problem?
Yeah.
I mean, who knows you are in periods? And what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
So the bishop identified those leadership qualities. I go to the training. I did certificate level. Later on, I told myself, I think I need to go an extra mile. I went to do degree in theology. Bachelor of Theology at KEMU. Then I came back. Then we were ordained. Then after ordination, I was, you know, like now, even the bishop and those, you know, people are still not sure whether even these women, if they are given parishes to lead, whether they'll really manage. So we were put under, you know, to serve under clergy, male clergy.
And men, the men who did not have that done to them.
No. Because now you see they are not sure whether these women will actually make it.
Yeah.
But so I say, if I served in that position for a few years, then I was made a mother's union coordinator, which for the church then was okay, because I think that's where she can serve well as a woman, which I did actually very well,
yes,
in my view, because I spearheaded, we were able to enroll more than 3,000 women into the Mothers Union.
Mm-hmm.
I spearheaded an IG project,
mm-hmm.
Comprehensive funeral unit project,
okay.
with a hearse, lowering gear, PA system, trolley, everything.
Yeah.
And so that is it. So from there, then I was given a responsibility again with the bishop's office. I became the bishop's personal assistant.
Mm-hmm.
A role which I did for about 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was made an administrative secretary for the diocese for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was now made an archdeacon.
Mm-hmm.
An archdeacon in the church is the deputy principal of the bishop.
Mm-hmm.
And I was put in charge of 11 parishes.
Okay.
Before then, you know the way Anglicans go through transitions when a bishop is retiring or by various reasons, that transition happens in a way that the archbishop becomes in charge of a diocese that is vacant.
Mm-hmm.
But because the archbishop can't be there always, they appoint a commissary.
Mm.
So I was appointed a commissary, and mm-hmm. I served for 8 months as a commissary,
mm-hmm.
Cairo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing to be in charge of a diocese.
Yeah. You enjoyed it?
Not as a bishop,
mm-hmm.
but a woman
mm-hmm.
who God has given the grace.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from actually that appointment then, I think, that the people of Butere mm-hmm. were able to see the qualities, mm-hmm. the leadership qualities in me.
Mm-hmm.
So that when the diocese fell vacant after that transition, the people asked me that they wanted me to lead the diocese.
Mm-hmm.
I had no choice.
Mm-hmm.
They went and took forms for nomination. They nominated me. We went through the process. I went to the interview together with my colleagues, 8 of them.
Mm-hmm.
3 of us were shortlisted.
Mm-hmm.
And we were exposed to a voting.
Mm-hmm.
The electorate is formed of 23 membership.
Mm-hmm.
And so out of 23, I had 20 votes.
Oh, wow.
And I thought that was God's doing. The other thing I haven't mentioned, yeah. that in my serving God,
mm.
I have learned to be patient.
Mm.
I have learned resilience.
Mm.
Because there are many challenges being a woman, all the way coming from cultural perceptions, the way society just puts you in a place, like it happens with many women, that we are put in some corner
mm.
and our roles are defined mm. according to the culture.
Yeah.
And so for the people of Butere having the confidence to elect me as their bishop, and more so a widow.
Mm-hmm.
It's even worse when you are a widow.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are things culture determines that you can't do as a widow. And so when people are electing you as a bishop, there are those things you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, these people, I hope they are conscious of what
they're remembering. And so also it's for you, you're remembering that.
Yeah, yeah.
You're remembering the cultural constraints
yes, yeah.
that you're thinking, surely you know. I'm a widow.
Yeah, yeah.
Surely you know I'm a woman.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, because yeah.
We are actually in the middle of a conversation elsewhere, and it's coming up. Culture is coming up as a real hindrance for women in leadership now.
But do you know what, Carol?
Yes.
The people who voted for me, because that electoral college comprised of only 4 women, yes. and majority were men.
Yes.
So the people who voted for me were men.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
That's amazing.
Yes.
It is the grace of God.
Mm.
When God gives us the grace,
yes.
when He speaks,
mm.
we can't stop Him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Bishop, could you tell me about what, in your experience, what does the church lose when women are not in leadership?
Carol, as it is,
mm.
the church is bound to lose, the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
Because the congregation, like in the Anglican Church, and only in other churches,
mm.
the bigger population of those who attend services are women.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately also, that the many women who attend church services sometimes do not want to support their fellow women. But also, because we have, the women understand challenges of their colleague women, so the church will lose there, because most women will not want to confide, you know, their personal, very specific issues with men. And they feel so happy, like when I'm, like in my case, many of them come to me. They want to throw everything to you because of the fact that you are a woman, so you understand them. Yeah. So the church will lose in that area. But also the church will lose to the fact that the world is changing.
Yeah.
God has spoken. And if we don't listen to God, the world is changing very, very fast. We need to have the Bible properly interpreted.
Yeah.
Because I think the other thing that is bringing down and getting women into, not into leadership, is the way the Bible is interpreted. The Bible is interpreted in the eyes of men.
Yeah.
It is so patriarchal that sometimes, like you have, you may have heard when people are trying to interpret the thing that Paul was talking about in you know, in the church at Corinth, addressing you know, the women not talking in the church.
Yes.
So people take it literally. They don't want to get to the historical context and be able to understand. And so they use that as a tool to bring women down. So if women are getting this top leadership in the church, they will be able to bring more women in the in this leadership, like in my case, what I'm doing in every leadership position, I'm always concerned that I need to put a woman there. So if we have, like, if we were, like, let's say 20 or so or 15 Anglican bishops, and we will be doing the same thing I'm doing, the church will be very vibrant. The church will grow. It will be able to address issues, because there are women who understand issues down here on the ground. They are, because they take care of families, they go, they nurture families, they really understand the issues. So if we have many women in this leadership, they'll be able to connect easily with the issues in the society and be able to address them as it is.
Okay. Thank you. You spoke, as we were talking about your journey, you spoke about mentorship, you spoke about being given the opportunity to lead, you spoke about the man who saw the leadership qualities in you and pointed it out and gave you opportunity. How does mentorship play about in finding your voice as a leader?
Mentorship is crucial.
Yeah.
Very crucial, Carol. Because as I said, if somebody had not held my hand, I would not be where I am. The church, and as I'm speaking from that perspective, has a major role in mentoring.
Yeah.
And particularly mentoring young girls, in my case. There are so many who have, who are aspiring to get into, you know, to serve God and grow through the ranks. But they can't be there without mentorship. So mentorship is a major component in leadership. If you don't mentor, then it means you're actually doing it all alone, and it will die there. There will be no growth.
Right. And so one of the things we are doing in this conversation is showing or having a conversation about the role of, like, mainstream, what, I don't want to call them mainstream feminists, but feminists, faith leaders, community leaders in women, in helping women in faith spaces find their voice. How do you see mainstream feminists, the feminists in church, where do you see places of collaboration in, let's say, non-faith actors and faith actors in women leadership and in faith spaces? Where do you see that?
There are many areas of collaboration, Carol. One is to do with exposure engagements, like the one you have done today. Bringing together women and discussing. That is one area of collaboration. The other area is to support women who are showing interest, aspiration in leadership, in, for example, training. Because one thing I have realized in leadership as a woman, that you have to go an extra mile. You really have to go an extra mile.
Yes.
So if, like say, if it's training, you have to be above others. So that would be another area of collaboration. Identify leaders, particularly women leaders who have the aspiration, and support them, grow them.
So it's training, empowerment, and all that. What do you say?
And encourage them to form groups, encourage women to form groups so that they're able to share. I realized that, you know, I started a program with widows. In my first engagement with them, I realized that we have not helped them as much. Sometimes when we think about widows, we see people who need financial support or so, or economic empowerment. But just even a space to share, but just to fellowship and be able to appreciate that they are not alone. So creating those spaces for me would be one area of collaboration.
Thank you. And then for you as a leader, what have been the joys of leadership and the sorrows of leadership as a woman? What are those things that you have found have given you joy?
Let me begin by joys. You know, the title of a bishop in the Anglican Church comes with a lot of power. And so whether you are a woman or not, society has nothing to do because it gives you power. So when you get into a place, everybody's like, oh my goodness, the bishop is here. And so you want to be treated in with respect. That gives me joy. And the other thing that gives me joy is that to see, you know, the people we are mentoring. Like when I'm interacting with the widows and the very vulnerable widows, because I run that program, it gives me joy that I'm able to minister to them. I'm able to fellowship with them and pray for them. That gives me a lot of joy. Another joy is that, like I said, it exposes, you know, it exposes you to many many people, many partnerships, and you are actually exposed, and you are able to represent others in that space because of the exposure. It gives me a lot of joy.
Okay.
I guess that I'm able to serve God in this position, it gives me a lot of joy.
Before we go to the sorrows, I want to talk about the power. There's a lot of women who are leading in church spaces, but they don't have titles. They don't have power. What's the importance of having power behind your title?
The importance of having power behind your title is that you are able to control. You are able to legitimately control. Because everything, like in the Anglican Church, the buck stops with the bishop. So you are in a very safe space to control.
And what does control give you?
Control helps you to make decisions, like now in my case, that will favor society in the light of God. Because like what is happening, even you know that power also can be very corruptive if you are not careful. And sometimes when you are drunk with it, you can mess up yourself. For me, the power that God has given me gives me joy because I'm able to make decisions that are addressing issues, pertinent issues in society. Like reaching out to the vulnerable, marginalized groups. When that discussion comes up in, for example, the synod where I chair, I want to push it, I want to front it, so that we are addressing real issues.
So it's power to serve and to serve well. And if we, if you are not there, that power will be used to
correct.
Thank you. What have been your sorrows?
My sorrows, like any other woman, there is so much expectation from society. Society looks at you like in my face, and the election is, let's watch and see whether she'll be able to make it. When I hear those comments, it saddens me because I know that God has called me in this space. The one who calls me is faithful.
He's faithful.
Why would people be standing on the fence and wondering whether she'll make it? And more so, just a widow. I've had those comments often. Do you know she's a widow? Even just that, for me, it's stigma in mm-hmm. itself.
Yeah.
Because why would you even make that reference? Mm-hmm. I am a servant of God, yeah. whether I'm a woman or not, mm-hmm. whether I'm a widow or not. So it's that has been part of my sorrows. Mm-hmm. And also, just the fact that I'm, you know, raising the family mm-hmm. single-handedly with this huge responsibility. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you sit down and you're like, oh my goodness, mm-hmm. this is much. Mm-hmm. So you get to a level where you are like, it's humbling you.
Yeah.
It's humbling you to mm-hmm. just sit back and reflect and mm-hmm. see how you'll be able to figure out mm-hmm. everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, just the stereotypes, mm-hmm. the stereotypes that society puts on women, mm-hmm. and it's a sorrow, it's a discouragement, but also an encouragement, mm-hmm. because I have told myself I have to demystify these stereotypes,
mm.
because you never know. That's why God called me into this place, being the first woman. Mm. In the country, mm-hmm. in the Church of Anglican, mm-hmm. what mark am I leaving?
Mm-hmm.
If I will not be able to do anything, one of the things I want to do is to demystify these stereotypes
mm.
about women and widows for that matter.
Mm.
Yeah.
What do you think made it is, because you're the first woman bishop in the Anglican Church mm. in Kenya. What made it easy for, and you come from this Western region, what do you think made it easy, or why did it happen in the Western region first? What factors in this community allowed for it to happen?
My thinking quicker was that people have watched the way I have done things.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have served in the church for more than 20 years.
Yeah.
Before I became bishop.
Yeah.
Like I told you, I started that Sunday school.
Yes.
And so all along, people are watching how I have done things,
mm-hmm.
how I have my performance, mm-hmm. how I have been able to do ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Like I told you, the Electoral College is formed by 23, but out of 23, we had only 4 women.
Yeah.
So if I was able to get 20 votes, it mm-hmm. means most of the men voted for me.
Yes.
Which is a rare thing for men in this society.
Mm-hmm.
They have watched me. That's what I did. They have watched how I have performed. Like yeah. I told you, I have risen through the ranks very gradual.
Mm.
There's no rank I have not served.
Mm.
I have risen gradually through the ranks.
Mm-hmm.
So people have seen how I have served.
Yeah.
So it calls for aggressiveness. It calls sometimes for assertiveness.
Yeah.
It calls for patience and resilience.
Mm-hmm.
When God speaks, he has spoken.
Yeah.
But it's actually hard work.
Mm.
You have to prove that you can.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. You're speaking to me as well, because as a leader, as a woman, knowing what God has called me to, sometimes you feel like it's taking so long. And especially because I'm called into the faith space, working with faith leaders for justice. I'm like, will they listen to me? I am just but a woman. But having people like you who've gone before us and seeing that it is actually possible is so inspiring.
Let me tell you something else, Carol.
Yes.
In our community where I come from,
mm-hmm.
Culture dictates that you cannot look a man in the face the way I'm looking at your face.
Mm.
So in most cases, the women we are talking to, men, you'll be looking either side or down.
Mm.
And one thing that my mother taught me that has helped me through this challenge,
yes.
Every time she would tell me, please, when you are talking to men, look them in the face.
Mm.
They'd shy away.
Yeah.
That is what I have done. I thought, you know, sometimes when I reflect on those words mm. and what the magic, mm. it has worked.
Yes.
I just get amazed.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you talk to men and you are really looking at them, they realize that you have the personality
mm.
that, you know, they can't easily confront.
Mm-hmm.
But also from a Christian point of view,
mm.
that it also means that I'm regarding you as equal.
As an equal.
Yes, yeah. Mm. So when we are interacting, for example, with my male colleagues, when I'm looking at them, you know, the way I do, they also realize, and I also appreciate, that they should be able to realize that we are equals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you so much. Is there any parting shots you would have for young women who are looking to one day be bishops or one day be leaders of big organizations, lead this country? What words, parting shots would you have for them?
One of the things I want to say, Carol, is to encourage the young women who aspire leadership positions to first of all believe that they can. It is very important for you to your own self-confidence, to build your self-confidence and say that I can. That is one thing I think I didn't say when we were discussing. That as I was growing up, I had the confidence that I really want to serve in a bigger space.
Yes.
I didn't know how. I know that God was calling me to serve in the church. But now this, you know, the thinking in me, I needed to serve in a big space. But now in the Anglican church, I started now by building my own confidence that indeed I can.
Yeah.
So one, they need to build their self-confidence that we can. The other thing they need to do is to aggressively pursue. Aggressively pursuing means when opportunities come up, however small they are, let them take them.
Yeah.
Because you can't begin from top. You begin from down here. So that they are able to, you know, gradually grow. But sometimes you never know. God can do things that you can never understand.
Yeah.
God will be just calling a young girl in a village. And it may not, God may not even want to give you all this time to gradually grow. Just pulls you out of that village.
Yeah.
One thing that they need to do is to understand the space. What do I really want to do? I mean, what do I want to do? Because it's not leadership in a vacuum. What is it you want to do? That is very crucial. And once they are able to understand themselves, build their own confidence, understand what they want to do, then they pursue to understand the system, then assert themselves. Because society will not.
Yeah,
you have to push yourself in
it. You have to put yourself in it. And what? Thank you. I want to go back and listen to what you said because it speaks so much to me.
Yeah.
Your parting shot to the church
yeah.
and the patriarchal nature of the church, because it's a system that has been used to silence women so much.
Yeah.
What do you say about even for feminists who are looking, who want to be in the church but can't be in the church because it's so patriarchal, what would you say to those who are looking to come into church but cannot because of the patriarchy in it? But also, what is your parting shot to church as a system in the face of patriarchy?
Carol, church is God's space. Unfortunately, we have turned it otherwise. But it's the space of God. And in God's space, we are all accommodated.
Yes.
So those who want to come to church and they will be wondering because of, you know, the church will not support them as it is because they are women also, let them understand that we are serving, operating in the God in the space of God. And now for the church, I want to encourage the church to read scripture in the light of God. Not to read scripture in the light of culture. Because when you read scripture in the light of God, you will know that we are all equal. Because I know that even men who are feminists sometimes are looked as weaker. That, you know, like they are weak. So when they are in the church or doing anything, they will not. There's a way in society puts them somewhere as weak vessels because they are, you know, are speaking, they are feminists. Even the women who are feminists, sometimes church puts them in some corner. Like, I want to remind you when this movement started in Beijing.
Yes.
The women who went there and when they came to share with us, the liberative discussion that was there. You know what people and really the church did? They have labeled them. And so they would say,
Olo,
this is our mama Beijing. meaning hawa mama wa vichwa ngumu.
Hard-headed.
Yes. Forgetting that church is God's space. Mm. Really, church is God's space.
Yeah.
It is not Bishop Prosser's. Mm. It is not anyone's space. Mm. It is accommodative of each one, every one of us. Mm. And we have space.
Mm.
So that the church is able to give space to people who want to serve, whether they are female or not.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your wisdom. And thank you for being a light to many. Thank you for the days you have served. Thank you for the days you served when it was hard. Thank you for breaking barriers for us so that we can come in.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you too, Carol, for giving me the opportunity to share this story.
Yes.
There is so much we can share in my journey.
Mm.
But we continue thanking God because He has given us this space at a time as this.
Yes.
There is so much I can tell you. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
What is something that you regret in your journey? Is there something that you think of and say, I wish I had done better? I wish I had. And how do you deal with times when you feel like you didn't speak out when you needed to speak out?
Carol, not a specific thing,
mm-hmm.
but generally, sometimes I keep regretting that I wish I had come earlier in this space.
Mm.
Because now we have opened up a Pandora's box.
Yeah.
Everybody would want to come in because somebody somewhere has started it.
Mm-hmm.
So many women would have come in. In fact, for me, one thing I didn't tell you is that one of the factors that made me, I mean, people of Butere to elect me, was the fact that Bishop Emily had been made assistant bishop.
Yes.
So they kept saying, you see, a woman has been made, so we can also have a woman bishop. So we keep, like when I'm talking to Bishop Emily, we keep praying and regretting that I wish this had happened earlier. Mm. But it wasn't our fault.
Mm.
It was the fault of the church.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't give that space to the women who are then before us.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And you see some very powerful women
who've
gone before you,
correct,
who would have made amazing
bishops. Yeah.
But the time and space wasn't there.
Yeah.
So this is a lesson for the church, for us
too. Yeah, yeah.
When we feel the time is right to just go ahead.
True.
And
but it isn't too late. That is why we continue encouraging the women to come on board.
Yeah.
And where we are able, like in this space, to bring them, we will do what we can to get the women into the space.
Right. Asante sana, and this is for you. Thank you, our closing. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for the lessons that you've learned. It is such an honor and privilege to be in communion with you and to be led and to be inspired by you. Thank you that you're using your voice to transform society. You're using your voice to be a light to many.
Yeah. And we'll keep talking. We'll keep talking about these things. Next week, I'm hosting a huge forum to discuss gender-based violence.
Mm.
Because those are some of the things we are now. When you're in this space, you take the opportunity. Because men are not doing
Thank you. So listen to us. Follow our podcast, at Msingi Talks, podcast on YouTube and on Spotify, Anchor, everywhere where you listen to podcasts. And yes, let's keep spreading the gospel of women and women voices.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you so much, Carol.